It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, I did say it was likely to get weirder after the election than before it. And unfortunately, it seems I was correct. I might be a little bit this evening because it's been one of those days where, I like to get a good solid night's sleep. And then, you know, face the rest of the day. I'm not one of those Donald Trump types who can, nap for 2 hours and then expect a day filled with executive time and tweeting while I rely on the meds to keep me coherent or conscious. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to, A, help to keep the program on the air. We've got a $345 fundraising goal to bring us even with the end of this evening. It would have been $385, but thanks very kindly to Otto. Otto jumped in and took us down from $385 to $345. Thank you, Otto. Thank you very kindly indeed. And then, we've got subscribers to thank. Yes, indeed. Thanks very kindly to these are our subscribers for the 8th day of the month. Thank you very kindly to Dwayne. And thanks as well to Tom. Thank you, Tom, for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to our buddy Ron in the far, not quite yet frozen north. Thank you to Marcia. Thanks, Marcia, very kindly for helping keep the program on the air. Thank you to Nancy for being one of the people who makes it possible not to go off the air, because let's be honest, nobody's going to run out and try to sell ads. This program would die if we were running ads. All these years of talking about no buy gold now ads, if we turned around and had buy gold now ads, I don't think so. Or, you know, we also foreclosed ourselves from most nutritional supplement ads, because after all, you know, All this time of Horn Nutraceuticals and all this. So, thanks to our subscribers. Thank you, James. And one and all who keep this program on the air. But we mentioned the subscribers at the top of the program because their support rolls in when the program is not live. It is the 8th day of November, 2 days out from the election, 2018, about 52 days left in the old year. And like I said, I didn't sleep so well because my phone started dinging. I forgot to turn the little bastard off. My phone started dinging with news alerts early in the wee hours of the morning, and so I groggily toothpicked my eyes open, propped them open, sort of clockwork orangish, and began to watch the unfolding horror coming from Thousand Oaks in Ventura County, California. Jesus Christ. It literally never ends. What we know is that it was Line Dance Wednesday at a bar called the Borderline in Thousand Oaks. A bucolic, if the word has ever been appropriate for a town, a bucolic community about 35, 40 miles northwest of Los Angeles. The Borderline had a clientele that was frequently made up of college kids, college bar. They were a country western music kind of bar. And as previously noted, it was Line Dance Wednesday. That's when an ex-Marine of some 29 years of age, 28, 29 years of age, named Ian Long, dressed head to toe in black, approached the Borderline, bearing a Glock semi-automatic pistol with an extended magazine. The extended magazine becomes important here, because the state of California, or more appropriately, the people of the state of California, have declared that they do not wish for lawful gun owners, who, of course, remember, are only one consonant and the distance traveled before the trigger causes the firing pin to strike the bullet or the shell, the pin to hit the shell. They had declared that they did not wish for gun owners in California to have extended magazines, but the National Ruble Association filed suit and got an injunction against enforcement of that ban on those magazines. Well, that being the case, I couldn't help looking up just exactly what was going on with that. I don't know. Ian Long, the former Marine, managed to kill 11 or 12 people before shooting himself. He shot the security guard outside. A Ventura County Sheriff's deputy ran in to try to stop him with no regard for his own well-being or his own safety. And was murdered by ex-Marine Ian Long. But it's, well, so I went and I looked up an extended round magazine for a 45 caliber ACP Glock pistol. And I thought you might find this audio interesting, because YouTube is chock-a-block with firearms enthusiasts who are trying to make a little bit of scratch by reviewing gun stuff. And so here's this character, Dirt Road, who is reviewing a 30-round magazine extension. I found it interesting because of the glee that this YouTuber brings to his review. See if you can catch what I mean.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. And I apologize about the mess here. I've got a lot of gun projects going on.
Oh, yeah, he's laughing already.
But this is one product here. You read the title of the video that I just got. I am super excited about.
It's an extended magazine from a company called Chris USA. chris-usa.com. It's a fairly simple thing, as he'll explain.
Excited about this one. I hope it works. I do want to thank rockyourglock.com for having this at a super low price of $30 and shipping it out to me really fast.
Nice plug.
Oh, this is pretty easy. You just take apart your factory mag, slide it into this housing. It's nice and tight. And then once that goes up, this piece is just going to click into place. You just take the follower. So got it together here.
A little spring.
Just push. There it is.
Not exactly complicated technology.
Sweet.
But it turns your Glock into a 30-round double stack semi-automatic weapon. The highly trained Marine who entered the borderline in Thousand Oaks, California, was only carrying this one pistol. But he was carrying it in .45 caliber. This is not to say that being shot with a 9mm or a 380 or a 40 cal or a 10mm is any better for you. But long, long, long ago, at the beginning of the 20th century, the .45 caliber ACP round was developed because, as pistol bullets go, it's a whopper. A 9mm round might be anywhere from 110 to 140 grains, but a .45 caliber pistol round can go north of 230 grains. It's a big old bastard bus of a bullet. And so it tends to carry a tremendous amount of kinetic energy, stopping power, and killing power. One presumes that Ian Long, the Marine, knew this. When he made his choice, and when he ordered his extended round magazine. Now, bear in mind, the voice on this video is not Ian Long. It's just one of millions of firearm enthusiasts with which this country is plagued. Let's continue. That maniacal little giggle. He does that when he slides the magazine in and hears it click into place inside his Glock 21 pistol, which, by the way, is equipped with a flashlight so that you can shoot people in the night.
Oh, we got to take it out and shoot it now.
Yeah, I guess we do, don't we? Wonder who might have helped. Wonder what kind of research Ian Long did trying to find his extended magazine for his Glock 45 caliber pistol. We don't know.
So guess what?
Okay, now he's loaded the extended magazine this YouTuber has with 45 caliber ammunition. That was the sound of the magazine clicking into place. He's outside on his own personal shooting range on a hilltop somewhere in God only knows. He's got a hanging metal target roughly in the shape of a human torso out about, what, maybe, 30, 40 feet, maybe 50, I don't know. And he is just beside himself with glee.
Gotta take it out and shoot it now.
So guess what? This has just got a big smile on my face just holding this thing.
Yeah, he holds it out for the camera, and he's just, like I said, beside himself with glee. And then he's going to tell us where his mind, where his head is.
This has just got a big smile on my face, just holding this thing. What are you bringing to Farmageddon?
What are you bringing to Farmageddon? So this is a guy who sits around fantasizing about some sort of apocarev when he's going to get to kill all kinds of people. And giggles.
All right, let's just dump it.
Let's just dump it. You ready? I'll warn you. For people who have been in and around gun violence, this might have some trigger aspects to it. If firearms fire is disturbing to you, you might want to sort of turn down your audio for a minute or so. If not, well, you can sort of imagine, although it won't be as perhaps fast as this guy unloads, because he's just blazing away at a target. But wait a minute. So is Ian Long at the borderline in Thousand Oaks in Ventura County, California. The people who survived that outbreak of Second Amendment freedom early this morning in California said they thought there were fireworks going off in the bar. Here's a hint. No one should be bringing fireworks into a bar. If something in your... And maybe that's because we engage in a little bit of denial. We don't want to think that somebody could come into spaces where we're just enjoying ourselves and start murdering people willy-nilly. But this is America, and that does happen, and we have the National Ruble Association to thank for it. If you're out in a public place and you hear what you think are fireworks, or what your brain wants you to think are fireworks, do not assume they are fireworks. Assume that this is America and that people are being shot at. And take cover and, for Christ's sakes, try to protect yourself. Okay? Here we go.
No hit.
Yeah, buddy. Did you hear him laughing and giggling while he was shooting that fucking thing? Here's a hint. In an America that wants to be safe about firearms, we should probably not let people have firearms who giggle while they're shooting them. Just an idea. Did you hear how quickly he was able to discharge? Did you count like the count on Sesame Street?
30 rounds of 45 ACP ammunition from an extended magazine. 30!
Did you? Yep, he loaded all 30 rounds in there. And he discharged them. He fired them. Pretty lickety split. And then he started giggling.
Yeah, buddy. Look at that sheen. Have a great day, guys. Thanks for watching.
Hey.
Yeah. Now, again, just to make sure we're clear on this, the people of California said, we don't want those. But the National Ruble Association said, fuck democracy. Fuck what the people of California want or don't want. Fuck that. We're going to court. And so they got an injunction against enforcement of the ban on extended magazines that made it possible for 28-year-old Ian David Long to go into the Borderline Bar and Grill and destroy the universe for 12 people as well as himself. How about that? He was a lawful gun owner. Again, with the understanding about how quickly that L can disappear from the word lawful and render it to simply awful. Yeah. And while people like Dana Lush and Coleon Noir and Greg Stinkfield and Oliver fucking North can prattle on about how, well, hell, ain't no NRA member ever caused no mass shooting. Not that we ever, not that they would admit it if it was. But remember, as I've said before, the National Ruble Association claims to represent every lawful gun owner in the United States, of which this guy was one. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But in this particular blood-soaked exercise in the Second Amendment, in which the NRA's roulette wheel of death spun and spun, and the pointer stopped on Thousand Oaks, California. You know, they say in gambling, the house always wins. The NRA is the house. And you see, it doesn't matter what community the pointer lands on, the NRA always wins. In this particular case, though, the fact that they had taken active measures to prevent the implementation of a law against the very thing that Ian David Long used to slaughter so many people so quickly means that the blood of the innocents, well, the patriots, because remember, the NRA constantly quotes that line from Jefferson about how the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of tyrants and of patriots. Well, I'm sure that people line dancing in a bar in Thousand Oaks, California weren't tyrants. Or maybe since the people of California spoke up and said they didn't want these extended magazines, maybe that made them tyrants. But I prefer to think of them as patriots. But, you know, the blood of the tree of liberty must from time to time be watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. 12 cases, 13 if you count the murderer, the terrorist. 13 bodies full of natural manure in Thousand Oaks. And the line extends directly from the Borderline Bar and Grill to NRA headquarters, where a legal decision was made to challenge the will, the democratic will of the people of the state of California. The line travels straight from the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks to the NRA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia, sitting hard by I-66, a mirrored glass cube of a building, and that line is painted in the blood of innocence. Now, here's the interesting thing. there's lots of interesting things. But Ventura County, California Sheriff Jeff Dean pointed out that his department had had several contacts with Ian David Long over the last few years. Traffic collision here. A fight wherein he got the shit kicked out of him at a local bar in 2015. Earlier this year in April, they were called to his house and found that he was acting, and this is a quote, a little irrationally. The Ventura County Sheriff's deputies who went to the house, quote, felt he might be suffering from PTSD, the fact he was a veteran and had been in the Corps. They called out our crisis intervention team, our mental health specialists, who met with him, talked to him, and cleared him. There's a heartbreaking photograph of the murderer wearing his BDUs with a pack on his back with a fluffy little, almost looks like a little Labrador, a little yellow or white Labrador retriever poking its cute little head out the top of his pack. Thanks, NRA. Thanks for nothing. Yeah. Couple of photos of him with dogs. Jesus. Absolutely sickening. Absolutely foreseeable. Downright predictable. As David in Tennessee pointed out to me, when newly elected Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Goodness Blackburn, who is, of course, up to her eyebrows in NRA corruption and pals around with people who were a link between Russia and the NRA, when she was asked about the slaughter in Thousand Oaks, the first thing she said, the actual first thing she said was, and this is a quote, "What we do is say, how do we make certain that we protect the Second Amendment?" Over a million NRA dollars. Over a million National Ruble Association dollars went into her campaign. So that after the next mass slaughter, she could stand there and say, "Goodness, fuck all those dead people. What we have to do is protect the Second Amendment. Goodness." And of course, nothing will be done. Let's see. Let's review real quick. Things that have not caused the Congress of the United States to do anything about the ongoing horror occasioned by our sick and fetishistic interpretation of the Second Amendment in the United States. Things that have not caused anything, things that have caused absolutely nothing to happen. Sandy Hook, little children being slaughtered. Pulse, gay people being slaughtered. The shooting at the yoga studio in Tallahassee, women being slaughtered. Aurora, Colorado, moviegoers being slaughtered. Tree of Life Synagogue, Jews being slaughtered. And we're just hitting the high points here, or low points. And the Borderline Bar and Grill, line dancers being slaughtered. So, given that the Senate will remain in the bloody clutches of Addison Mitch, Chinless Mitch McConnell of Kentucky for the next 2 years, again, it grieves me to say it, nothing will be done. Not because it's a particularly knotty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, knotty problem. There are a number of different solutions for this, but not one of them will even be considered because of the Republican parties and therefore, by extension, the National Ruble Association's death grip on the Senate of the United States. Now, we can at least have a vision come January, I would suspect, of some of those solutions in a House of Representatives that is back in the hands of sane people. I don't know what those potential solutions will be, but we will have some suggestion of solutions. Because that's part of the reason that the House will go into Democratic hands in January. Lucy McBath, for instance, in Georgia, who defeated Karen Handel. Lucy McBath is the mother of a still-dead young black man who was murdered for playing his music too loud. And she campaigned for office specifically on the issue of trying to do something to staunch the flow of blood that are occasioned by actions that take place inside that mirrored glass cube owned by the National Ruble Association that sits hard by I-66 in Fairfax, Virginia. And as Laurel points out, at least one of the people who survived the Thousand Oaks Massacre also survived the Las Vegas Massacre. That's the kind of stories that one used to hear 100 years ago coming out of the First World War, where there developed things like never light three cigarettes off the same match, because the striking of the match alerts the enemy. The enemy draws a bead as it stays alight long enough to light the second cigarette. And by the third match, the gun is fired, meaning three off a match kills people. We have a point of comparison in 21st century America with something from the nightmare world of early 20th century trenches in France. Damn. But I also thought about the Tralfamadorians in all of this. If you are any kind of a fan of the work of Kurt Vonnegut Jr., you know who the Tralfamadorians are. The Tralfamadorians are an alien race who see time as just another dimension, the way that we see length and width and height and depth, the way that we experience touch and the way that we comprehend smell and the way that we understand hearing. Well, for the Tralfamadorians, time is just another sense. And so, if I understand it correctly, when a Tralfamadorian looks at somebody, they see the entire life, past, present, and future, of an individual. And so, when I looked at one little fact coming out of Thousand Oaks, it seemed, and I'm not by any sense making light of anything. I'm earnestly not. It seemed positively Tralfamadorian, because one of the individuals who was killed was a 54-year-old Ventura County Sheriff's Deputy named Ron Hellus, H-E-L-U-S. He was a married man. He had one full-grown son. And he went right in. When he heard the gunfire, he went right in an attempt to save lives and was murdered in the process by a terrorist. I know, it's kind of, yes, it's hard for a lot of America to call Ian David Long a terrorist. After all, he was so male and so young and so white. But that's exactly what he was. But Deputy Ron Hellus wasn't much more than a couple of months at best from retirement. He had joined the force 29 years earlier. Ian David Long was born during the rookie year of Ventura County Sheriff's Deputy Ron Hellus. And so in the same year that Ron Hellus became a law enforcement officer, Ian David Long entered the roles of living human beings on planet Earth, the only planet that we absolutely certainly know to contain life. And those two lives ran parallel to each other, but not truly parallel in the geometric sense. And I got shitty grades in geometry, but the concepts weren't lost on me. I just couldn't be bothered to memorize all of those proofs when geometry just happened to be right after lunch, which was generally in high school when we would slip out to behind the field house and blaze up a couple of doobies. Stoned is no way to get through geometry. But you can have, according to Euclid, you can have lines that look perfectly parallel, but if there's a variance in either one of them, eventually, those lines, which, according to Euclid again, run to infinity and beyond, eventually, if there's a variance in which those two parallel lines move even infinitesimally toward one another, they will eventually intersect. And so it was that the lives of Deputy Hellus and former Marine Ian David Long, which appeared to run parallel and would never touch, actually, the Tralfamadorians would say, were not quite as parallel as they would have thought. And so, although it took 29 years to do it, they intersected at about a quarter to midnight on a Wednesday night at a country western bar in Thousand Oaks, California. Damn. There is some question as to whether he actually had the extended round magazine or whether he reloaded. Unfortunately, with stories like this, you get bad, you can get some bad writing. I'm looking at the story from Agence France-Presse, which refers to the Glock pistol as a short-barreled pistol. That's a sort of a matter of opinion. But apparently he did stop to pop one clip and pop another one in. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Irish Dave says, wait, will the NRA now advocate for the law permitting line dancers to open carry in bars? Armed line dancing is civil line dancing. You see, the bar had security staff. And the shooter dealt with that by simply shooting the security staff first. No more problem. At least not for the shooter, the murderer, the terrorist. Of course, Julius Geezer immediately took to the Twitter and said, I've been fully briefed on the terrible shooting. Terrible, terrible. Who gives a fuck whether you've been briefed on it, Julius? You're not going to do anything about it. Because you're perfectly content, because your masters at the NRA are perfectly content to have one of these happen every day, every couple of days or every couple of weeks. I remember a time when it seemed like this was only happening every couple of years, but no. Steve from New York points out, Deputy Hellas. Know what? Hellas is a form of the German word hell, which means light. But it wasn't H-E-L-L-E-S, it was H-E-L-U-S. I don't know. Funny things happen to people's names when they emigrated to the United States. Generations ago or weeks ago. Some people in Thousand Oaks are still waiting to find out where their loved ones are. Jesus. But again, we have, and we have to fall back on what we know in a situation like this. And the one thing we know is that the Republican Senate, in whose controlled by and the United States in the tender clutches of chinless Mitch McConnell, won't do a damned thing. Not one damned thing. David in South Carolina, Stan, had an immediate thought similar to mine. Incel? Question mark. Don't know if this guy was incel. However, witnesses said he specifically targeted young women. He certainly fits the demographics for it. Well, whether he is or not, if it's just the case that he was targeting young women, the incels out there will be celebrating him as a hero and a martyr, just like they have the other incels. In regard to the murders in Tallahassee at the yoga studio last week, incels took to the internet to declare, "It's just a pity he didn't kill more of them." Here's the math, courtesy of Robert in Australia. I looked it up, Bob. 307 mass shootings in 311 days in the United States of America. 1,200 dead, approximately. That's running about 0.04 per incident of Second Amendment freedom outburst. And this was the story with which I led on this evening. And you try to find some way to describe it, or some way to make sense out of it, or some way to perhaps point a way forward. But in the end, it proves to be an act of futility. Because you keep running up against that one great, big, thick brick wall. And that is that the Republican Party, which controls the Senate of the United States and the White House and the Supreme Court, will not do a damned thing. Not for the love of our little first graders, not for the love of our LGBTQ community, not for the love of the women who are the majority of people in this country, not for the love of college kids going out, blowing off a little steam, line dancing, not for the love of moviegoers, not for the love of shoppers in a grocery store parking lot, not for the love of college students on an engineering university campus, not for the love of 11 elderly Jews attending a naming ceremony, not for any reason will the Republican Party buck their owners, their masters at the NRA. Kind of biblical, too, really. There's all those passages in Genesis, in the myth about the Exodus. It's myth, okay? It's not history, it's myth. That's not saying it. No, it's just, it's like talking about the myth of Theseus and the Minotaur. There might have been some kernel of truth back there about it, but it became myth. But there are elements in the Exodus bondage in Egypt myth. There are passages that say that various plagues and curses were laid by Almighty Jehovah on the land of Egypt, but that Pharaoh's heart had been hardened, and he would not relent. Eventually, Pharaoh only relents because the Almighty, remember this is a story, sends his angel of death it was a moment where God Almighty said, I'm rubber and you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you. So Pharaoh called for the killing of every firstborn male child among the Hebrews, and God said, I'm rubber and you're glue. It bounces off me and sticks to you. And sent the angel of death to slaughter the firstborn male son of every Egyptian. And so only when the horror had been brought home to Pharaoh did he relent and say, fuck it, go, leave, get out of here. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. And so we ask, what will it take for the Republicans in the United States Senate to finally move to put the people of the United States of America first before their masters in the National Rifle Association? What is it that will crush the hardened hearts of people like Mitch McConnell? And thus far, the empirical data would suggest that there is nothing. Not a damned And frankly, the way that the millionaire for-profit media cover these things is not particularly helpful. They grind the story into the ground to the exclusion of just about everything else. Until, well, they've said everything there is to say about a story, and then they continue to say things that there aren't to say about the story. But there is this. We came closer than we thought we had a chance of being to taking the Senate. In a year in which taking the Senate was running at odds, as I'd noted last night talking with Scott in San Diego, running at odds approximately identical to the odds of hitting all the numbers in the Powerball. It ain't. Well, it ain't going to happen now. But if there's any potential happiness, not happiness, but if there's any potential relief or respite in this, it is the knowledge that we have a chance to change this country in 2020. And while it may seem silly to be talking about 2020, only 2 days after an election in 2018, for every mother who worries about her son or daughter or husband, for every father who worries about his son or daughter or wife, for everyone who wonders when they see some Cletus in the fucking Walmart with a hog leg strapped to his hip because he's too much of a chicken shit to go for a jug of milk or a loaf of bread without strapping, and wonders if they're going to get out of the store alive, or is that guy going to turn out to be an awful gun owner instead of a lawful gun owner. For every one of those human beings, 2020 represents an opportunity to bring some degree of sanity to this barbaric abattoir that the NRA has created out of the United States of America. The objectives are clear. Donald Trump must be defeated, and not simply defeated, but crushed. There cannot be any doubt but that he has been rejected. The 10 seats that the Democrats have to defend in 2020 must be defended, and the 20 that the Republicans hold must be taken. I'm talking about total victory. If we are going to be at 47 or 48, if we could defend all of ours and take all of theirs, we'd be around 67 senators on the Democratic side of the aisle. And that would even allow a mugwump like Joe Manchin to vote with the fucking Republicans, and we could still pass some sort of gun legislation. So while there's an element of hopelessness that does attend another one of these godforsaken, horrible, heartrending slaughters, there is at least the faint outline of a trail through all the choking, cordite-laden smoke. It does exist. And there are people who are willing to teach. People like the Native Americans on the reservations in North Dakota, where Republicans in that state did everything in their power to suppress the votes of the people whose ancestors have been here longer than any other people, certainly any other black or white or any other ethnicity, been here on this continent longer. Before the election, I was talking about the overwhelming number of people who had to vote. Some places did, some places didn't. But the fact of the matter, listen to the numbers from North Dakota, where the tribes had to mobilize with almost no time before them to make sure that people could go and vote. Standing Rock in North Dakota is located in Sioux County. There were 2,752 eligible voters. Native Americans. 1,464 ballots were cast. Back in 2016, there were 1,257. They were determined to vote. They stand as a beacon for the democratic process. Turtle Mountain Nation is in Rolette or Rolette County, R-O-L-E-T-T-E. There were 5,102 ballots cast there. And the number of Native Americans voting was the highest in the history of the tribe. Young tribal members marched, chanting, "North Dakota, you can't do this." Spirit Lake Nation is in Benson County, North Dakota. 2,288 people cast ballots there. That's higher than the 2,068 total in 2016. Naturally, a Republican is already shrieking voter fraud because she was on the ballot and she got beaten. Because it couldn't be that she lost because she was aligned with people trying to take away votes from people who have bled to have the right. It had to be, because that's always the way it is with Republicans, voter fraud. Even though voter fraud exists at a rate of about, what, maybe 30 per billion votes cast? I mean, it's a crazy number. So David in South Carolina Stan says, subject line, 2020. And we need to pick a presidential nominee and coalesce behind them no matter how perfect, imperfect they are. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do. And, well, I'm trying not to be negative. But it's going to be hell among the yearlings going after the Democratic nomination for 2020. Steve with a note, incels, etc. How did we become so goddamn fucked up? Sorry about my extreme foray into profanity. That ain't extreme, Steve. You're not even trying, brother. And that's not a 3-hour program question. That's a three weeks of programs questions. You could make an argument that a whole bunch of the archival history of the horn is an answer to the question, how did we become so goddamn fucked up? Another mass shooting, asks Flavio. Just another day that ends in a Y in the United States, that's all. Nothing to see here. Move along. Yeah. Other stuff to go into this evening. And, of course, your calls. When I started seeing the news out of Thousand Oaks, I recalled that one little, and it just, when I heard it, it was shocking and horrifying and sickening the first time. And you have to go back and actually listen to the audio. It doesn't work if you're just looking at the transcript. But Stand by. Just a minute. Sorry, for some reason or another, the stress line dropped the Bluetooth once again. It's kind of weird that way. But, where was I? Yeah, plenty to go into this evening. But let's go to the phones first. And a reminder, we've got $345 to raise this evening. It would have been $385, but Otto jumped in. Thank you, Otto. But it would be nice not to be looking at $545 tomorrow evening on Friday. Waiting for an email to open from David in South Carolina, Stan. For some reason or another, it doesn't want to. It's Thursday, so we have the Green News Report coming up, but I will forego that for the moment because I hate leaving people on hold, especially on the toll-free number. Let's go and talk to Randy in Georgia on the stress line. Hey, Randy.
How you doing though, Bob?
Another day in the shooting gallery, right?
Right, because you have people like such as Daniel Oaks saying that the Thousand Oaks mass shooting was horrific, but so are California's gun laws.
Jesus Christ. She really said that.
Yeah, she said it on her show Relentless, on her NRA TV show Relentless, because it was up on Media Matters today. It's still up there if you want to check it out, man.
I'm looking now.
She said it on radio talk show, huh?
I'm looking now.
Yeah, it's just a picture, no video clip or anything. And she even said it on a radio talk show, too, which is broadcast from and out of Dallas, Texas. I mean, she doesn't even live in or even near California. So how would she know about anything about the California gun laws when she doesn't live in or even near the state?
Well, see, now, here's the problem. California has gun laws. Therefore, California's gun laws are bad. The ultimate goal of the National Rubel Association and filthy little purveyors of mayhem and murder like Dana Lush is that we should be a nation without gun laws in which the place is reduced to an anarchic shooting gallery. That's why I've been convinced for years that the NRA is actually an anti-American, anti-constitution, anti-civil society, subversive organization.
Right. And, and they hire people like her to purvey that message of, hate filled lies. Yeah, literal lies and stuff like that. On both her radio and TV talk shows, too. You know? And nobody fact checks her on anything because they're scared or afraid of her.
Well, they're afraid some loyal follower of hers will come and blow people away.
Yeah, but we can't have that kind of fear, man. We can't have that kind of fear. And what do you think about what happened to Jim Acosta last night, or yesterday?
It's sickening, but it's par for the course. This is exactly how authoritarian, tyrannical, dictatorial organizations behave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right down to producing and using dummied up so-called evidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not, like, I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not, but the video, so-called evidence that Sarah Hasselbeck's that came straight from Alex Jones. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to say about Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
Well, no, that just that she was purveying a fraudulent piece of video from Alex Jones.
Yeah, and he never assaulted that woman, that young woman either.
No.
He tried to take the microphone away from him to give to yet another reporter. You know, and his press pass got revoked too yesterday.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
What are they going to do? What are they all going to do about that?
The millionaire for-profit media will do precisely nothing.
Why you say that, Bob? Why exactly do you say that, Bob?
Because there's not much of a sense of unity. Peter King tried when he stood up for Jim Acosta, and he was verbally assaulted by Julius Geezer too. But the fact of the matter is, this is it was a term that I coined last week: access infotainment.
Right, access infotainment.
So you got to have access in order to provide your infotainment product. So no, there's not going to be a boycott by the millionaire for-profit media of Geezer Disgustus, because that would just mean that he would sit there and masturbate in front of his pet propaganda arms.
Right. But what do you think that – you think that Walter Winchell and Edward R. Murrow and, and the rest of them, Walter Cronkite and Peter Jennings are all laying in their graves doing a 360-degree rotation? You think they're all spinning in their graves?
To a certain extent, yeah, because those were all people who had direct experience with fascism. So consequently, they would have recognized Trump as a fascist out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
God knows, John Chancellor, David Brinkley, Chet Huntley, Howard K. Smith, Andy Rooney, all would have recognized Walter Cronkite. They all had direct experience of what fascism looks and sounds like. And they would have spotted Donald Trump from a country mile away.
Right. But nobody's willing to fight for this man, Jim Acosta. Don't forget, Dan Rather has faced fascism, too. So did Woodward and Bernstein, right?
In their way, yeah. Rather in particular. Woodward and Bernstein are a little bit iffier, because they were a pair of youngish reporters when Watergate broke. Walter Cronkite flew missions over Germany in a B-17 or a B-24 or something like that.
Right. And even Barbara Walters herself faced fascism. Even, you know, she wasn't on the front lines of anything, but she faced fascism, right? Firsthand, when she became the first female news reporter.
Yeah.
Well,
she certainly faced her fair share, more than her fair share of sexism, and so I would hope that she was appalled when, say, the Access Hollywood tape broke. But the problem was, for instance, what's his name, Jeff Zucker at CNN, who runs the show there, and sent out a memo to the team at CNN saying, you know, we will always stand by our and we. Are guardians of our First Amendment, Fourth Estate, blah, blah, blah. The problem was, when Trump first started running, Jeffrey Zucker was in his corner because he thought it was going to have great entertainment value, a la the WWE. And the same thing, and the same thing applied at NBC and at CBS, who said, what's the poll quote? Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
Now that would be Les Moonves.
Right, who has since taken his golden parachute and jumped out of the plane. Right.
Did he take his wife along with him?
I don't know. She may be driving around in a car with a license plate that reads "was his" for all I know.
Right, and she stepped away from television to do her, I don't know, her perfume or her cosmetic line or something like that. But what if this keeps happening to every reporter who tries to question Donald Trump? Is he going to revoke all their press passes? You know, or just select?
I really don't have any way of addressing that, but I want you to bear one thing in mind, please, Randy.
Yes.
Donald Trump called on Jim Acosta. Jim Acosta
right.
didn't jump up and say, "God damn it, you're going to answer my question or face the wrath of the..." No, he called on him, and he hates him, so he was actually picking the fight. Again,
yeah.
this is typical WWE scripting.
Right. And he attacked... Yeah, go ahead.
And he was drugged out of his mind, pacing around the stage like he was on fucking crank.
Right.
And for all we know, might have been.
Right. Well, he attacked April Ryan the exact same way, called her questions racist.
And did the same thing with Yamiche Alcindor.
Right. And, you know, I mean, but I don't hear anybody standing up for Jim Acosta. Maybe it's just me. Or did they still stand up for him and I didn't hear it?
I tuned in my filthy little habit there on MSNBC this morning and heard some... outraged consternation.
Right. But that's all you heard from them? What about go ahead.
No, I mean, it's but again, because the coin of the realm is access, what they should do is, you know, take a page out of the labor history playbook and go on strike against Donald Trump's propaganda operations and just not show up. I mean, ask yourself, Randy, what is there to be gained? What was there gained except finding out that this guy's every bit as crazy as he's been for the last two goddamn years? What was gained by that piece of bizarre, absurdist theater that went down yesterday?
Well, nothing except for ratings. You know, they don't cover anything they don't cover anything relevant that's real in the world, that's real to most people, like I said, there's police brutality to blacks and other minorities. They don't cover things like that, man. They just cover him all day and night long, 24/7. It's like they're psychotically obsessed with him. They can't stop covering him, you know? They're obsessed with him. They need to go see a shrink about that, because obsession can kill if you let it go too far and get way out of hand and out of control, you know?
Well, but the thing that drives all of that is, again, how much money can you make off of it? All right.
Right.
So even outlets like the New York Times that are producing a little bit of decent journalism here and there, and the Post is doing a better job than the Times. Well, they're enjoying a monumental uptick in their readership. Okay.
Right.
So that means that even though he continues to harm the body politic and harm the republic, he's still doing great business for the millionaire for-profit media.
You mean like such as Fox, NBC, CBS, and ABC, and the rest of them, right?
Any media outlet that is driven first by profits.
Yeah, yeah.
Any media outlet that has to either directly or indirectly service shareholders.
Right. And then do you think, you know, and I'm sure Wolf Blitz is in that clique too, right?
Oh, God almighty, please.
Do you think he'll question Donald Trump? He'll fold like a wet blanket.
No.
He'll be, why you say that, Bob?
No. Well, wait, who are you saying is going to quit?
I mean, I'm saying, will he be able to question Donald Trump too, or will he fold like a wet blanket? Will Blitzer and the
Will he? You know, CNN questions him. I mean, CNN criticizes him, and as far as I can tell, it's pretty valid criticism, and we can tell it's valid criticism because Donald Trump hates it so much.
Right, right. But what about MSNBC with the Chris Matthews, you know, who calls his show Hardball, but I think it's Softball.
Well.
It's Softball rather than Hardball. What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, I saw a headline coming out of Lawrence O'Donnell's show last night where, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for the analytical prowess of Lawrence O'Donnell, but he was predicting that the Democrats will demand and will receive the impeachment that they want. And I for the life of me, I can't wrap my mind around why we would be that goddamn dim.
Dim about impeachment?
Yeah, why on earth would we think that there's anything to be gained in the House by impeaching Donald Trump?
Well, I wish you would tell it to Nancy Pelosi. What do you think about what she has to say about impeaching Donald Trump?
Which part?
You should tell it, you know. Well, impeaching him to try to get him out of the White House, to remove him from office.
Yeah, well, impeaching. See, that's the problem with the whole impeachment argument. There are some people who are trapped in the past, Randy.
Right.
For instance, I think there are some people who think that somehow or another the Nixon effect would come into play here. Because Nixon was on the verge of being impeached, and so he decided, well, you know, probably better off for me to resign and save the nation the agony, blah, 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 and P.S. along the way, put something in place where my ass won't go to prison.
Right.
But the problem there is that Nixon, somewhere deep, deep down in the fetid, cavernous cesspit that was his soul, had a molecule remaining of something vaguely resembling human decency.
Right. Like and, Ronald Reagan.
And that was what motivated Nixon to quit.
Right.
That tiny scrap, that molecule, that scintilla urus of human decency does not exist in and never has existed in the being of Donald fucking Trump.
Right.
So to think that the House of Representatives could impeach him and he'd say, "Oh my God, I've been impeached. I've been brought to disgrace. I better resign."
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. He'll say, "Fuck you. Try me in the Senate. I dare you."
So you think that Nancy Pelosi and people like her are stuck way in the past? Don't forget they tried to.
Look, you cannot blink at criminal conduct by a president of the United States.
Right.
The investigations have to take place. The criminal conduct has to be exposed. And the House will cooperate with Robert Mueller, assuming Robert Mueller is still in place.
Right.
What I'm imploring us is to not get, not to hang all our britches on the clothesline of impeachment.
Right.
Because it probably will fall down.
Yeah.
But there is a question that must be answered in this country, and that is whether or not a sitting president may be charged with a crime. Or in the case of Donald Trump, a whole lot of crimes. Like a 50-count fucking indictment.
Right. And what do you think about Sean Hannity, Jeanine Pirro, and the rest of them standing up, and Rush Limbaugh standing up there with Donald Trump on his platform?
Well, is it unusual to see whores in a whorehouse?
No, it isn't.
With all due respect, and to sex workers who work very, very hard for their, but is it at all surprising to see prostitutes in a house of prostitution?
No, it isn't, Bob. Not at all.
Well, that's what Jeanine Pirro and Sean Hanjobity and Rush Flush Flimbaugh are.
Yeah, but two of them on radio. Well, one's on radio and the other two on TV and radio. Well, Sean's on both, and Jeanine's on television, and Rush is just on radio. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Sean and Jeanine and Rush, they are after money.
Of course.
Rush never got richer than Rush got during the 8 years of Bill Clinton and the 8 years of Barack Obama.
Right.
And in fact, you know, we got Rush's addiction, didn't we? Or Rush became an addict during the George W. Bush reign of error, when he was so goddamn bored that he was just sitting around eating OxyContin like freaking M&Ms and crushing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
Right. Right. But what about the other two?
Well, it's all money.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right. And they always go back to Barack Obama when people come out against Trump. They always bring up Barack Obama's name when they come out against Trump. Or Bill Clinton's name. Are they psychotically obsessed with those two? I'm talking about right-wing talk radio and television.
Well, sure, because they are aligned with the bigotries of their audience, so that they can then deliver their bigoted audience into the hands of advertisers who want to sell them gold, or wave radios, or mattresses made out of foam developed by NASA and designed in Sweden, or hardwood floors from the rapidly diminishing and disappearing forests of the South Pacific, or steel buildings made of steel made in China out of furnaces we ship from here to there.
Right. And I wish we could revoke their passes. I wish we could revoke conservative talk radio's passes, period. But I know that we can't do that because that violates their freedoms of speech. Or am I wrong on that, Bob?
No, you're not wrong at all. You're not wrong at all, Randy. Not at all.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you called, my friend. It's good to hear from you, and we will talk soon, all right?
All right, man.
All right.
Don't be a stranger, man.
Oh, I'm here every night. You be here, and I'll be here.
All right, man.
Later. Bye now.
Later.
Randy calling from down Georgia way, where, by the way, it ain't over. More shenanigans down in... Oh, God. I don't know if democracy can prevail, or the aspirational urge toward democracy can prevail. But at least Stacey Abrams hasn't given up. And by the way, a giant fuck you to every alleged journalist who said, well, you know, there's less than 5% between Andrew Gillum and Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. But Andrew Gillum has already conceded. You know, American politics is not like some sort of game of hide-and-seek where you yell, Ollie, Ollie, Oxenfried, and something happens. It is still possible that the votes may be counted sufficient to make Andrew Gillum governor of Florida. And Bill Nelson return to the Senate. But I love Stacey Abrams' response. Brian Kemp resigned as Secretary of State today. That must mean that he got all the fixes in. But he said, you know, I've got to start working on my transition. And Stacey Abrams was like, yeah, hold on. Not so fast. Because, you know, after all, the state of Georgia has managed to trundle on for more than 200 years without the benefit of Brian Kemp being governor. So there's no real hurry to get it started. It's more important to get the whole thing right than it is to get Brian Kemp started getting his back feet into the trough. He's had his front feet in the trough in Georgia for 4 years, and now, like any good hog, he's trying to get his back feet in too. Some comments coming along from our buddy Arnold in PA. An impeachment gives us Pence, also gives us Donald in 2020. Impeachment empowers the Republicans. Impeachment, fuck it. Best thing to do is pick a damn liberal Democrat and have them campaigning their ever-loving ass off starting yesterday, as far as the nominee is concerned. As far as what you're talking about right now with Rush, absolutely perfect analysis. The right-wing media is a bigot juggernaut. Brought to you by the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Kind of hard to forget that. Earther with a note. Dana Lashes said something horrible? Freedom Dana Lushki said something horrible? That's not like her. For instance, it's time the iron fist of freedom squelched the tyranny of being safe. It's time we said hell to, heil to self-defense. We must obliterate the angry fascism of mothers ripping the guns from our hands when we shoot in a park. It's time we concentrate our protest against our enemies and the child lobby. The child lobby. Yeah. Her tweet earlier today, as referenced by Randy, Dana Lush said,
"What happened was horrific. Evil is real. So are California gun laws. Universal background checks. May issue. 10-round mag limit, purchase limitations, 10-day waiting period, no reciprocity with other states, assault weapons ban and registration, ammo through FFL, registration if moved."
That bloodthirsty response to a tweet from Nicholas Kristof that read, "13 dead in a bar shooting in Thousand Oaks, California, dozens more injured." Folks, these kinds of incidents don't happen in normal countries where there's some reasonable regulation of firearms, starting with universal background checks. And that apparently triggered Dana Lush. "And it was horrific," said she, "that people were killed and maimed. Evil is real. So are California gun laws." Jesus Christ. A 10-round mag limit. Oh, the horror. Limitations on purchases of firearms. Dear God, the flag is falling. Yeah. Subject line, fainting. David in South Carolina stands, says, "Sarah Sanders told a lie? I am shocked. I nearly fainted. However, Lindsay Loonhead stole all the fainting couches." Yeah, I know. Poor little old Lindsay. He wants to be Attorney General so bad. If John was still here, maybe John could impress upon Lindsay's new boyfriend, Donald Trump, how good an Attorney General Lindsay would be. Mercy, for goodness sake.
So the
lines are open if you would like to jump in and add your 2 cents worth to the conversation. We'll take a break. We're halfway through the evening now. Again, $345 to raise this evening so as not to be facing $545 tomorrow. And we are rapidly approaching, well, there's always, because we operate on the last frayed thread of a dry-rotted sneaker lace here, there's always a bill waiting to be paid. So, if we like, you know, this program doesn't have Buy Gold Now ads. We don't have ads for olive oil extracts that will make your wife so thin she disappears. We exist because you continue to determine that this program will exist. I'll keep showing up as long as we keep the program on the air. And right now we're at $345, and if we could take that down to even $200, it would be a giant help. But like I said, it's a Thursday, and we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Let's see what's happening with them. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, November 8, 2018.
It's been a night of victories, and it's been a night of some painful losses.
Green News Report special coverage, big wins and losses for the environment in the 2018 midterm elections.
I sincerely hope that someday soon
The Committee on Science will cease lecturing and harassing scientists.
Yep, science to return to the U.S. House Science Committee. But
Goliath strides around crushing these things with overwhelming force.
Big oil's big money overwhelms state energy ballot initiatives.
All of those big stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So environmental is very important to me.
Yep, putting the mental in environmental. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know that there's any other way to say it other than good news and bad news for the environment from Tuesday's big midterm elections.
Yep, the midterm elections are over and the battleground is coming into view for the environment and public health over the next 2 years. Mixed results in energy-related ballot propositions in several states, but overall, the Democrats seizing the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives is good news for science and for oversight of the anti-environment Trump administration.
It can't hurt.
Gaining the U.S. House majority means that Democrats will control committees starting in January, and that means controlling what legislation advances in the House or doesn't, like attacks on the environment or public lands. It also means oversight and more pushback against Trump agencies' attempts to roll back climate and pollution regulations.
It also means not dragging in scientists and haranguing them in the middle of these U.S. House hearings.
Exactly. The House Science Committee will no longer be run by a climate science denier.
Hooray!
Democratic Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson of Texas, the first registered nurse in Congress, is likely to be the Science Committee's new chair. That's the first time in 10 years it will be led by someone who accepts mainstream climate science.
Nice.
The bipartisan House Climate Solutions Caucus has fallen apart after half of its Republicans lost their races, although the Republicans tended to use the climate caucus for cover while blocking action in practice. It does mark a significant drop in the number of moderate congressional Republicans who publicly accept the need to act on dangerous man-made climate change. For ballot initiatives in the states, big oil's big money won big. The fossil fuel industry spent record amounts, at least $100 million nationwide, to kill ballot measures that would have curbed fracking and mining, expanded renewables, and created the nation's first ever carbon emissions fee.
Well, free speech, as long as you have billions and billions of dollars to buy it.
They have a lot more free speech than the rest of us do.
Yep.
In Colorado, voters rejected a proposition that would have required fracking wells to be placed further away from homes and schools after the oil and gas industry outspent organizers 40-1. But Colorado also voted down a sneaky constitutional amendment that would have shielded the oil and gas industry from regulations and allowed the industry to sue the state for any losses resulting from any restrictions or regulations on fossil fuel exploration.
So the public figured that one out, at least.
Yes. In Alaska, the mining and oil industries also spent big to defeat a measure that would have protected the state's billion-dollar salmon fisheries from mining and drilling pollution. Mm. In Washington state, big oil killed the really big one, spending a record $31 million to crush Initiative 1631, the state's second attempt to enact the country's first ever carbon emissions fee, a really mild one on big polluters.
That's weird. I thought ExxonMobil was in favor of a carbon tax. Didn't they spend millions and millions in support of the Washington measure?
No, they didn't. The exact opposite.
It's like they're just lying about supporting a carbon tax or something.
In Arizona, the utility industry laid out $31 million to successfully defeat an amendment requiring them to get 50% of their electricity from renewable sources by 2030. Yet over in Nevada, voters approved a similar mandate to get 50% renewable energy by 2030.
Well, win some, lose some.
In Florida, voters approved a measure to ban offshore oil and gas drilling and also ban vaping indoors in the same initiative. Because Florida. Finally, California voters rejected an attempt to repeal an increase to the state's gas tax that's now funding repairs to roads, bridges, and infrastructure. So there's that.
So there's that. At least California voters didn't fall for the nonsense.
Nope.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime for free at Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I can't find comfort in the fact that it could be worse. I can't find comfort in the fact that it could be worse.
19 before the hour. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, this 8th day of November. A few things just to bear in mind. Because there was so much madness in that spectacle yesterday, that WWE steel cage death match that was billed as a press conference. That it's easy to get lost. Among other things, Julius Geezer was asked directly what he planned to do about exits from his administration post-midterm. He said, well, I'm not sure I even made all my decisions. I'm thinking about it very much. I'll let you know. When he knew that the resignation letter that he had demanded of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was already on his desk. Sessions had said he wanted to finish out the week, and John Kelly said, no. You gotta go, Jefferson Davis. You gotta go today. And there's a reason. So that's another thing Trump lied about. But there's also there's also this. There is an urgency that is probably accompanied by, Daddy, you gotta help me. Daddy. Because reports indicate that Donald Trump Jr., he's either Uday or Kusei or Beavis or Butthead, can't keep him straight. But Udy is apparently shitting kittens with crocheted tails, waiting to be indicted by Bob Mueller. And the notion being that that indictment could drop at any moment. Now, again, Mueller's investigation is tight as a drum and not leaking. This is not like back when Brett Kavanaugh was the head leaker for the Ken Starr administration, and the thing, rained more than it leaked. I mean, the Ken Starr administration had leaks the way the Titanic had a leak. But Mueller has been pretty close to the vest. And you tend only to find out what Mueller's done when the grand jury tells you what Mueller has done. And for all of Geezer discussed us as claims, it's a hoax. There's nothing to it. Yeah, there's a lot of how many indictments are we? Are we north of 20 indictments now, of people associated in the immediate circle around the chlamydia Claudius, something like that. Well, according to Gabriel Sherman over at Vanity Fair. Tangerine Tiberius is in a depressive funk. From his story, from Sherman's story, the following. In recent days, according to three sources, Don Jr. has been telling friends he's worried about being indicted as early as this week. One person close to Don Jr. speculated that Mueller could indict him for making false statements to Congress and the FBI about whether he had told his father about the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Russians to gather dirt on Hillary Clinton. Remember, this dirt was offered by an adversarial foreign government. This source had heard that the case could revolve around Trump's former deputy campaign chairman, Rick Gates, who's cooperating with Mueller and who was deeply involved in the campaign at the time of the meeting. Trump, this person continued, is very upset about the risks Don Jr. faces. The president is very depressed, this person said. So there's a sort of urgency for Trump to try to get out of the trick box that he has put himself in. And so that occasioned a necessity of putting this Whitaker goofball in charge of the entire Department of Justice as acting AG. But two, and remember, we're dealing with the WWE here. And remember what good friends Vince McMahon is with the Clementine Caligula. They're such good friends that, well, Linda McMahon's in his goddamn cabinet. Remember? She is still there, isn't she? Well, since it is WWE, and that means that there's always a backstory and a subplot, there's another reason for cutting the little toxic Keebler elf loose. And that is to let him return to his native soul down there in Alabama. Because you know what Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third might like to do? Why, yes. One of the seats that Democrats will have to defend in 2020 is the Senate seat occupied at present by Doug Jones. Because in its ever so finite wisdom, the Republican Party of Alabama nominated a youthful sex aficionado in the form of Roy Tola Moore to run for the Senate, thinking it was whoever they put up there was going to be a slam dunk. Geezer Disgustus had wanted Luther Strange, but Luther did not survive the runoff with Roy Tola Moore. But we can all remember how right I was about that whole mess. But Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III just may think he can run a re-election or an election campaign in 2020 and right the ship, as it were, and return a Republican to that seat in Alabama, wherein he would once again become the junior senator from Alabama behind Richard Shelby. Just bear this stuff in mind. When you are dealing with fascism, or most any kind of totalitarian authoritarian government, right-wing, left-wing, things are never quite entirely what they may initially seem to be. And so while the Marmalade Mugabe has been haranguing on and on and on about how Beauregard stabbed him in the back, which he didn't do, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was, among other things, a U.S. attorney of some considerable experience and was at least passingly familiar with the rules of recusal. And knowing, for instance, that he had perjured himself in front of the Senate, that he might be the easiest get of the entire Mueller investigation, that he was hand in glove in setting up meetings with the campaign and, say, Putin's pal Sergei Kislyak. He had to get out of the way. He had no choice but to recuse. But you cannot explain this to Marcus Aurelius because he has the legal acumen of a frosty dog turd. Okay? So there are, you know, it's an onion. It's not like a piece of baklava, which also has layers that are crispy and covered with honey and spices, and they're delicious. No, it's an onion, a really, really sharp, pungent, stinking onion that's rotten at its core, and it has layers, and it has multiple layers of meaning. Michael in Madison with a note, WWE, and don't forget, Trump is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Seriously. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And so every time somebody references his experiences on The Apprentice, my first thought, and, you know, it happened like during my filthy little morning habit, I'm like, no, dummies, this has nothing to do with The Apprentice or reality television. This has everything to do with the scripted, over-the-top fiction that is the WWE. Okay? Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego, subject line Trump and Acosta. Trump is literally on a fool's errand in picking a fight with Jim Acosta and CNN. Indiana attorney and politician Roger Brannigan apparently coined the phrase, "I never argue with a man who buys ink by the barrel," in a speech in 1955. His remark was in reference to newspaper publishers. In Trump's case, he clearly shows acutely poor judgment in getting on the wrong side of an organization that can similarly buy vast quantities of digital ink and operates from a satellite-delivered international media platform. Okay? Idiot, pronounced idjit. Yeah, there's that, but it's also a different world, Scott. He has his own fawning, pathetic propaganda arm in the form of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And so he can pretend to himself that it doesn't matter what CNN or MSNBC or CBS or ABC or PBS or any of the various newspapers in this country say. Because all he ever really watches is Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. That's what makes it particularly galling, I'm sure, for him when he finds out that a reliable little shill like Howie Kurtz actually stands up a little bit for Jim Acosta.
Well, after that angry exchange between CNN's Jim Acosta and the president, the administration decided to suspend Acosta's White House press pass. And just the latest clash between the president and the press who cover him. Joining me now, Fox News media analyst and host of Media Buzz, Howie Kurtz, joins us this morning. A lot of talk about what happened in that room yesterday, Howie.
Absolutely. Well, we saw Jim Acosta, as the audience just saw, debating the president rather than questioning him about the caravan. But then what he did afterwards, I've never seen a White House correspondent just keep talking after having several questions, refusing to give up the mic. But with the White House escalating to DEFCON 1 and yanking the credentials, it's kind of turning Jim Acosta into a journalistic martyr. Many in the news business are standing behind him, and it's shifted the spotlight from what Acosta did to whether the Trump team overreacted.
Well, Sarah Sanders put out this tweet in response to revoking his press pass. They stand by that decision. She's most recently tweeted, "President Trump believes in a free press and expects and welcomes tough questions of him and his administration. We will, however, never tolerate a reporter placing his hands on a young woman just trying to do her job as White House intern. The White House Correspondents Association, however, making it clear that they do not support this decision. The Correspondents Association strongly objects to the Trump administration's decision to use U.S. Secret Service security credentials as a tool to punish a reporter with whom it has a difficult relationship. Revoking access to the White House complex is a reaction out of line to the purported offense and is unacceptable. Howie.
Yeah, I think it's a misstep on the part of the White House to claim that Jim Acosta was laying his hands on this young intern and tried to take the mic away. The contact was very incidental. I also think it was a misstep for Sarah Sanders to tweet out a doctored video put out by InfoWars, the Alex Jones conspiracy site, that kind of made it more, look more aggressive than it was. His real offense here was being rude, as the president said, and he called him a terrible person. I don't know. President Trump knew what he was getting when he called on Jim Acosta. Maybe he wanted some kind of confrontation. If so, Acosta played into his hands. But now you have CNN, you know, which says it tries to cover the president fairly, putting out a statement saying that president's attacks on the press are un-American. That's a really strong word. And so another setback for the relationship, the very tense relationship, as we saw throughout that 90-minute news conference between the president and some of his questioners.
All right. Meanwhile, I want...
Yeah. Thanks to Media Matters for that clip. I mean, don't expect a lot coming from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, but even that is surprising. But there's a rule of thumb that applies. Whenever the members of the White Wing start pissing and moaning about things Democrats are doing, you know, one of the problems with abnormal psych is that it tends to prevent one, psychiatric pathologies tend to prevent one from being able to look at the world through something resembling a normal lens. And so over the course of the years, it's become a truism that whatever the Republicans are complaining about, you can generally posit that it's something they themselves are doing. Witness Sean Hanjavity.
Going on. I want to start in the state of Florida because it looks like the typical, predictable Democratic tactics of whatever it takes to win might be going on as it relates to the election of Rick Scott as the new senator from Florida and, of course, Ron DeSantis, the new governor of Florida.
That's Sean, proper journalistic reference, and let's remember that Fox has it made some sort of pretextual bullshit assertion that you're a journalist. You're not. The proper reference for Ron is Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. Please make note of your error.
I first took note of this when I saw Marco Rubio's tweet from earlier today. Broward election supervisors, ongoing violation of Florida law requiring timely reporting isn't just annoying incompetence. It has opened the door for lawyers to come here and try and steal a seat in the U.S. Senate and Florida cabinet.
You can't steal something from somebody who's already the incumbent. Basically, the racist dog whistling and the caging and the purging that's gone on in that state for years is the only reason is that the Republicans are able to, well, get what they've got. But there are, among other things, ballot irregularities now, especially in regard to the Senate race in Broward County, that are just fucking weird. And it's probably too much to even try to explain without 8x10 color glossy photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. But apparently, the Broward ballot was designed in such a way that you really had to look and pay super close attention if you actually wanted to vote in the Senate race. Steve Kornacki on Twitter has an extensive thread about this, and rather than sit here and try to read it, I will simply suggest that you maybe go and have a look at his Twitter feed, Steve Kornacki's. But there's no end of how, I mean, see, we're kind of simple. We've got this idea that democracy means one person, one vote. The Republicans, on the other hand, have a concept that says we don't want too many persons casting one vote, especially a certain subset of persons. Several subsets of persons. Any subset of persons that isn't a goddamn reliable Republican, we don't want voting. And so where we on our side struggle to get out the vote, get people registered, the white wing is constantly engaged in shenanigans to defeat the get out the vote effort. Look at the number of votes that were trashed by Brian Kemp during his tenure as Secretary of State. Look at the number of voter registrations. It's on the order of a million. A million voters. Among other things, David in South Carolina, Stan, helping out. Subject line, Florida results. They show that 18% of black women in Florida voted for DeSantis. You believe that? Yeah, that's just like all the older Jewish people who voted for Pat Buchanan back in 2000. At the very least, try to make as much mess of the ballot as you possibly can, and you may just be able to get away with a nice little piece of ballot skullduggery. But back to the hand jobbity.
Now, the margin of victory of the Florida Senate race, that's Rick Scott's race, has gone from 53,000 votes on election nights to 22,000 votes. And it all seems to be coming down to one county, and that would be, now, shocking, Broward County, home of the hanging, swinging, dimpled, pimpled, you know, Chad controversy.
Yeah, home of the Brooks Brothers riot. In which, of course, Brett Kavanaugh was an eager and willing participant, but let's just leave that alone. Yeah.
In 2000 with Bush and Gore, and the Board of Elections that is refusing to now say how many ballots remain to be counted, they don't have a... There are laws that they've got to be upholding here. My sources are telling me that, in fact, there is now an ongoing investigation into what has happened down there. And
your sources, Sean, citing the mad babblings of what is left of your mind, and this is proof that you're not a journalist, that's not a source. That's something like schizophrenia. Darlene in Connecticut says, subject line, F that. Lindsey Graham would love to be FBI director, not AG. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. How about we all wisen up and take the suggestion retired Justice John Paul Stevens dropped in his rare weighing in on current events a number of months ago in his opinion piece. His sagacious observation, grounded in his administration for the Parkland Kids activism for gun control, that they should really be asking for the complete repeal of the Second Amendment, needs to be taken seriously. That's what all of us who want reasonable gun control laws should be demanding instead. A complete repeal, so as to give the NRA and its minions the proverbial McConnell turtle squirts, to such a degree that they'll be grateful for gun control in the end in order to keep their precious penis-enhancing amendment. I mean, that's what this country's all about, right? Two sides arriving someplace in the middle. Meet the extreme with an extreme. Cries need to grow louder for repeal so legislators have a reasonable stance with which to say gun control laws are necessary to prevent the all-out repeal of the second. Just throwing that out there to the big U. And Darlene philosophically and in terms of real-world solutions, I couldn't agree more. But, you know, there's always a but. The problem that attends that is the idea of getting any politician who wants to be reelected to suggest it. And then there's the fact that, you know, these lawful gun owners would become awful gun owners overnight. And with the understanding that it's dangerous to even mention this kind of stuff anymore, well, we've got a lot of proof that they're willing to start shooting. And make no mistake, if there was ever a substantial effort to repeal the Second Amendment, the NRA would issue a call to arms. So, like I said, I agree. And I would happily join in a call like that because, well, I ain't trying to get reelected to anything. And the bottom line is, well, we put a lot of focus on semi-automatic assault rifles. They shoot a much smaller bullet, much faster, at a much faster muzzle velocity, say, than a .45 caliber ACP like was used last night in Thousand Oaks. But last night was also proof that if you make it difficult or impossible even to obtain those weapons, that guns are still guns and you can still kill a lot of people with one gun. And that the problem ultimately depends upon the person having access to the firearms. It's that weakest link in the chain argument. It's that argument about how, well, Jim Jeffries did it very well. You know, he said, you know, I can drive really fast, really well. But, you know, Fred over there plowed into a bus full of school children, and now I can't drive fast anymore. I think there are real, so-called real-world solutions that include things like, well, look, Ian David Long was thought to be suffering PTSD. They sent a PTSD crew out to see to him because they've got some sort of responsive safety net in a place like California. And they went in and cleared him because he was able to tighten himself up long enough to make him leave. That was April. This is November. Let's see, that's 11 minus, that's 7 months he kept it together and at some point began plotting this slaughter. Why he chose that bar, I'll never know. Well, maybe we will. But you probably should not be able to purchase a firearm in this country. You should probably not be able to keep a firearm in this country without passing a thorough psychological battery. You should also not be able to keep firearms on hand without proving that you have adequate insurance to take care of any accidental discharges and the injuries that often arise from them. You probably shouldn't, except under extreme circumstances, be able to keep handguns at all. And arguably, if you want to have rifles or shotguns, you should probably have to keep them locked up at your local gun club. And then when you want to go out and shoot at Bambi, you go to your gun club first and get your gun and then go a-hunting. Everything I've just mentioned would probably be enough to send this country into something approaching full armed rebellion. I'm sorry, but, yeah. Let's see. We're going to the phones here in a minute. Steve in New York asks, am I all wet? Something strikes me about the Whitaker-Mueller conundrum. My understanding is that Shitbag appointed Whitaker based on a statute that allows the president to appoint a person, an acting cabinet official, if the appointee is a senior official. However, the vacancy must be by virtue of a resignation, not termination, ergo, Shitbag demanding the Keebler Elf's resignation. So far, so good. My understanding is then that the AG, or in Rosenstein's case, the acting AG, because of Sessions' recusal, must approve indictments from the grand jury. So Whitaker must, as it stands, approve any indictments that come down. If, then, he does not approve an indictment of Udi, that would be an Article 3 case or controversy, because the issue is whether Whitaker can actually do that because he's not a legitimate appointee because Sessions did not resign, but Shitbag fired him. That would be an argument of, if you want to get legal and boring about it, constructive termination. Question. Who would bring that suit to challenge Whitaker's appointment and implicitly has the authority to deny Mueller's indictment of Cusay coming down? Am I in the weeds? It's all weeds, Steve, but that's a damn good question, and it matters. And at this point in time, I'd say that Mueller, constrained though he is by his insistence upon actually obeying the law, Mueller is in a race against time. Not to mention being in a race against fascism. Let's run down to Tennessee. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how's it going, Bob?
What's happening, Charlie?
Nothing much. I'm on my way back home. I was listening to your program, and the thing that really bothers me is whenever this guy Acosta got kicked out of the White House, I don't think Trump has title to the White House, does he?
No, he doesn't.
The American people own the White House, not Mr. Trump.
That's true, but that's why they use the Secret Service security pass.
Well, you know, I mean, this sounds like something that needs to go through the court system. I would think.
Yeah, I wouldn't put a lot of stock in it going through the court system, because the courts will say that barring clear and convincing evidence of an abuse of discretion, that the courts must defer to the judgment of the administrative agency on the ground. I'm paraphrasing pretty loosely, but that's basically Administrative Procedures Act stuff.
Yeah, I understand that. But what did Mr. Acosta do to threaten the president or show that he was going to do bodily harm to him?
Nothing.
We do have a First Amendment.
Charlie, it's not about the president. They're saying that they pulled the creds because he allegedly assaulted a poor, innocent little White House intern just trying to do her job.
Oh, who's that, Sarah Huckabee?
No, the little intern who tried to come and take his microphone away. Charlie, hold on.
I'm sorry.
See, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags presented a doctored video from Alex Jones in support of this horse shit, when the actual video shows that all the unconsented to touching that was done by the poor, precious little intern.
Well, you know, the American people, really, we need to stop being nice, and we need to stop kissing Trump's ass. And we need to stop kissing Lindsey Graham's ass. And we need to tell Mitch McConnell to go straight to hell and take his goddamn ignorant-ass farmers with him. I mean, you know, we need to, you know, this stuff's getting old. I mean, it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're 2 years in and it feels like 12.
And, you know, I mean, if I hadn't have been on the job whenever I walked into the hotel down in Knoxville that Trump was speaking at, and that guy was Farmers for Free Trade, I started to walk up that son of a bitch and say, you're the reason we don't have any jobs in this country. Why don't you leave? I bet you voted for Mitch McConnell, didn't you? And I bet you're from Kentucky. We don't need you here. I'm getting tired of it. I'm getting tired of these people that have the mentality of about a second grader walking around, packing heat on their hip, and thinking that they own the world. It's not a good thing.
Well, you saying you're getting about tired of it, that goes back to that Latin phrase from Cicero that we've been referencing. Quo usque tandem abutere, Catalina, patientia nostra. How long, O Catiline, will you continue to abuse our patience?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do that are legal. You know, you can tell a politician to go straight to hell as long as you do it in a calm manner that, you know, you don't want to start jumping up and down and make a case that you're going to do bodily harm to him. You just walk up and say, hey, Mr. Senator, you can go straight to hell and turn around and walk off.
Yeah. Might make you feel better, but I don't know that it accomplishes anything.
And, you know, it just...
Because remember, some people went in Washington, D.C., went and did that to Chinless Mitch. And you know, he was such a little pissant that he ran for the car while his wife stood there and said, leave my husband alone!
Oh, I'd love to get a hold of Elaine Chao. No. Oh, my God.
No, you wouldn't love to get a hold of her. Don't say that. You'd love to bless her out or tell her off.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a metaphor. I'm not actually talking about touching her. I wouldn't want to touch her, no.
I know. You and me speak. We speak Southern, but we just got to translate for everybody else.
But, I mean, you know, I'd love to have about 15 minutes with that little witch. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't respect her. I don't respect Mitch McConnell. There's not too many.
Oh, I've despised Elaine. I've despised Elaine Chao since she was shitting on nurses during the Reign of Error.
And, you know, I would tell her, I'd say, look, Elaine, if you want to come to this country and you want to forget about where you came from, just like your oath of citizenship says, you relinquish anything having to do with any potentate or foreign power. If you want to do that and become an American and leave China alone, welcome. Come over. We need more just like you. If you've got any more friends in China that want to come to the United States and become Americans and leave China alone, that's fine. But she can't do that. Now, I can't understand it. I have no affinity for Ireland or Wales, and I just, you know, they're there, and, you know, they do their thing, and I do my thing.
You're just an American.
Yep. I have no desire to go. People even ask me where my mother's people came, what county they came from in Ireland. I just look at them like, I don't know.
No idea.
What difference does it make?
Well, and that's completely understandable. I mean, hell, you live in Tennessee. People will ask you what county in Tennessee your mother's people came from, and it may determine whether or not you get treated with the you ain't from around here.
Well, I was born in Sullivan County, Tennessee. So I was born right across the line from Gate City, Virginia. Well, Weber City, Virginia.
Well, see, you may be suspect. You might almost be a Virginian.
No, me and Virginia don't get along all that well.
Spoken in true Northeast Tennessee fashion. You know, about 155 years ago, East Tennessee wasn't getting along that well with Virginia either.
Yeah. And, you know, I've lived all over the state of Tennessee. I've lived in Memphis. I've lived in Nashville, Gallatin, Morristown. And, I left Tennessee in 88, and I moved to San Antonio. And I loved San Antonio, Texas. I loved the people there. And the ones up in northern Texas around Fort Worth and Dallas, I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for them. It's almost like you're going to a different country when you go to South Texas.
Well, when you're when a state's that big, it's going to be like different countries. Hell, there was a time when the welcome signs at Tennessee used to say, "Welcome to the three great states of Tennessee."
Yeah, it was the Tennessee west of the Tennessee River, and you know you had the central part of Tennessee and then the eastern part of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I can remember that well.
Oh yeah,
I can remember back before they completed Interstate 40. I mean, you know, I can remember really not really all that well because I was just before school age back whenever you had to take 11W to Knoxville and take 70 out of Knoxville and go across the mountain and get to Monterey that way. We used to go down to my aunt's house in Monterey. She lived in Monterey, Tennessee. And
yeah, before that socialist interstate highway system came in, getting around, especially getting around in the hills, was awful, awful damn time-consuming and pretty damned interesting, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm, like I say, I'm 64 years old, so I've seen a lot of stuff go down. And, you know, I cannot believe that, I mean, people today are stupid. They are stupid. And this religion industry that we got in this country, it needs to come to a screeching halt. It needs to be thrown out. And if the people don't like it, we need to round up the people that are members of it and throw them out too.
Well, I will always... I will always defend people's rights to believe whatever they want to believe because, as the framers of the Constitution understood, you've got to have that, or the next thing you know, the government's out there trying to establish a state religion, and the next thing you know, people are bathing in rivers of blood. They knew what they were doing with that. The thing is,
you don't think
it's a matter of. It's a matter of teaching the religious maniacs to keep their mania inside their buildings.
Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, you've got the John Hagees and the rest of those clowns that you know they and what's his name.
Paul Well.
Mike Huckabee is, you know, he's the same way.
Well, it's all a grift. It's all a hustle.
Yeah.
It's all a matter of trying to see the mega millionaire evangelical religion relies on a capitalist concept of growth. You got to keep, it's the same theory under which the tobacco industry operated. You got a certain number of customers who die every year, so you got to replace them every year. And one of the ways that you keep bringing people into the hustle, Charlie, is to promise that you're gonna beat hell out of whoever your declared enemies are. And that means that you get noisy about government. Because that's the best way to leverage people's hatreds and bigotries.
Well, the one thing that bothers me, most of these dispensationalists, they believe in the doctrine of premillennialism, and you know they want to wage war against the Arabs in the Middle East because their God told them to. And I can't find that anywhere. I can't find it in the Bible. It just, you know. It's just not there. I mean, everybody is equal. I don't care what your ethnicity is. You can get along, and that's just the way I look at it. And you know, I have no respect for John Hagee and Ken Copeland. and Joyce Meyer, all those people. I just have no respect for them. And, you know, I look at it like, you know, that everybody on this planet, if we were to drop most of the religious teachings in the world today, people would, the standard of living would go up tremendously. I was talking to a guy from one of the Middle Eastern countries. I can't remember which one it was. And he was telling me that they each have their little kingdom, even though they're Arabs. They're all Arabs, and they're all Islamic. And you can't come into my kingdom because you belong in this one over here. And he said, if the land in the Middle East were to be shared, there'd be enough for everybody to have plenty.
Well, sadly, that's the common curse of all of humanity. There's pretty much, even as overpopulated as this planet is, there's enough here for everybody, but only if the people who are taking the most take less. There's an old bumper sticker out there you'll still see every now and then on the back of some liberal's car, and it says, "Live simply so that others may simply live."
Yeah. Well, I'm not too sure what conservative and liberal means, because if you sit down and talk with a conservative and they're honest about the way they believe in starting a theocracy. They do not believe in reining in the powers of government. They want to expand the powers of government.
Well, as long as they're the ones doing the governing, Charlie, sure. But the minute that they're not in power, they're out there squealing like a stuck pig about, "Ooh, I'm a small government conservative. I believe in small government. I want a government that's small enough to drown in the bathtub." Don't they?
Well, yeah, but
they want to expand. They want to expand government selectively. For instance, they don't want government on people's backs, but they're more than happy to have government in people's bedrooms.
Well, that's because they want to start a theocracy.
Exactly. Everything is driven. Right.
So it makes no sense for them to tell me that they want to shrink the size of government. I'd go right up to where I'm telling them, okay, let's see here. Let's deport John Hagee and Ken Copeland and Joyce Meyer and all these clowns, and let's say that we can't teach this anymore, because you're going to keep asking Congress to pump money into the Middle East that we could use here at home.
Well,
we can't do that. We can't do that. That's what the Bible tells us. What? Okay, you just told me you wanted to shrink the size of government where you could drown it in a bathtub. Now you're telling me you want to expand it because of your Bible. Which is it?
Well,
which lie do I believe?
Here you go, Charlie. If you ever run across one of those white wingers who says, "We want to shrink government," you look at him and you say, "I know you do. You want to make it small enough to fit inside a woman's reproductive organs." And you very well may shut them the up then. Charlie, it's good to hear from you, my friend. You drive careful this evening, you hear?
Okay, doke.
All right.
See you later. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Take care now. Bye. That's our buddy Charlie over in East Tennistan now. Formerly of Middle Tennistan, but now of East Tennistan. Let's see. Some time remaining in the program. If you want to jump in over on the 304-574-8178 or Skype to Skype Bob Kincaid Horn, you're welcome to. But in the meantime, we're going to check in with Scott over on the stress line. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I wasn't going to call because of a couple of things.
Oh,
I called earlier.
Stop that. Yes, you were. Now, don't be so coy.
No, I truly wasn't, because, see, I was going to go to bed at my usual time, okay, earlier. And I was flipping through the TV stations.
Flipping TV.
And saw coverage of this horror up in Thousand Oaks. And got kind of hooked on it, and then finally did go to bed, but I woke up late. And I missed the first hour of the show, and I hate to call because you might have covered something and I missed it, and why waste time with my missing the first hour of the show? But anyway, did you ever watch Jeopardy, the TV game show?
Oh, sure. Both with Art Fleming and with Alex Trebek.
Okay. Well, there's a category that pops up from time to time called potpourri. And the questions are not linked in any discernible way. It's usually just stuff that from categories that they didn't get to use in previous shows. So today's going to be a potpourri call, if that's all right. For Charlie, and you will not find me defending religion, but I must say that you can't just limit the bashing or the distasteful feelings toward just one aspect of our current system. In other words, it's not just the religion. And I think aren't the physicists for years now been looking for a unified theory to sum up everything in one convenient observation?
Yeah, that was Einstein's holy grail, the unified field theory.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I came up with one of an understanding or philosophical nature, which has a couple of years ago it just came to me, and I consider it my unifying field theory. And here it is: human suffering is neither noble nor inevitable. It exists because we permit it to happen. Quite often, religious, political, and business forces encourage suffering as it serves to help further their ends, interests, and purposes. And if that doesn't sum it up pretty well, I don't know. I'll keep looking. But it's like the military-industrial congressional complex. It's one of those dynamics. It's religion, business, and political, because the fact that people are suffering and the fact that it's not a better world, the charges need to be laid at the doorstep of religion, politics, and business, by and large. And I think if there were some way for these religious organizations to pay their fair share of taxes, we would see less of what we see in terms of their influence and availability. Because it's one thing if you go and you don't have to pay any freight. It's another thing if you have to pay freight on what you're doing. So that's my first potpourri item.
So far, so good.
So the thing with Trump and Costa, here's the problem. Trump is an idiot, okay? He apparently knows nothing of history. But lying politicians never get away with it. You know, you'd think his association with Roy Cohn in his formative years, Senator Joseph McCarthy's little hand puppet, and Roger Stone. You'd think that Trump's association with those two would have taught him this at some point, okay? The politicians, by and large, in varying degrees, are dishonest to one extent or another. The media always finds out, and the politicians are always made an example of. And the House and Senate, as it's currently constituted, rarely holds Trump to account, if ever, which is why I have to be a fan of the free, open, responsible, effective press or media. They're the last bastion in a lot of ways to keep the forces from breaching the walls, aren't they?
Well, they're supposed to be.
Well, so.
But let's take, if I may interject into this particular bowl of potpourri.
Yeah.
One thing. Again, I go back to the WWE analogy. Mm-hmm. I've read the. And by the way, I said Peter King. I was so wrong. No, it was Peter Alexander from NBC. So you know, we regret the error.
Yeah.
But the transcript.
A couple of words you'll never hear on Fox. We regret the error.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Again, this was a setup. You have to go back and look at the transaction between Trump and Acosta. Now, lots of people were asking follow-up questions. Acosta did the same thing. And when he tried to ask a follow-up, Trump jumped down his throat. But it's how he jumped down his throat that matters, Scott. He said to him, and this is the quote, "I tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible, horrible." Now, Jim Acosta had not said a goddamn word about Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, the pathological liar that masquerades as the White House spokes creep.
Mm-hmm.
She was not part of the discussion in any way, shape, form, or fashion at all. And yet suddenly he's leaping, he's in a fit of orange chivalry. He is leaping to poor, poor Sarah's defense. Well, if she's not part of it, if she was not in any wise part of the discussion, why is he suddenly making her part of it? And I submit to you, because it's the fucking WWE, and it was scripted.
Yeah, it's the grudge match dynamic.
It's fundamentally dishonest.
Yeah.
He called on Acosta. Jim Acosta didn't jump up and say, "God damn it, I'm Jim Acosta. You're going to take my question, you orangutan, you."
Yeah.
It was a fucking setup. It was the part of the show where the wrestler goes over the ropes and goes over and beats up the commentator because he's saying nice things about the guy in the blue mask.
Yeah, yeah.
It's wrestling.
Wrestling, yeah. You're right. I mean, I had a friend today on Facebook in the wake of this. Dear old liberal friend from D.C. who I've known the better part of 40 years. And we were on this topic, and he tried to make it sound as if the solution to this is to strictly limit the size of the crowd, the reporters in the room for these briefings. And he tried to make out like the trouble was caused by an attention whore. And I asked him, I said, you know, who in this story is... Please clarify, who in this story is the attention whore, Trump or Acosta? And he said both, which immediately pissed me off, because Acosta was there doing his job. Now, it could be that part of his job is to make Trump crazy, because it makes for good television in today's media environment. So to that extent, maybe there was a little whoredom going on with whoring going on with Acosta. But Trump, by God, I mean, I don't think anybody runs for president unless they're keen on being the center of attention. And that's regardless of party or belief. There's some.
Oh, yeah, I think if you run for president, there's probably at least a little bit something wrong with you.
No, I wouldn't say there's anything wrong with you, but there's a burning need to have you know, to people go ooh and ah about you from morning, noon till night.
Well, and not so much. And maybe it's not even that, Scott. Maybe it's a matter of some sort of burning need inside of you to be the savior you know you can be.
Or think you can be, in Trump's case.
And by the way, a couple of notes to share along the way. This is a fascinating piece of psychological observation courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. When Trump berated Acosta as rude and so forth, Trump was repeating what his father had said to him as a child. Listen to it. He was conjuring daddy. And when you hear that, you're a rude person. The way you treat her is horrible. You know, why don't you let me run the country and you run CNN and I'll run the country? Can't you hear old Fred saying, yeah, why don't you just do your lessons, boy, and let me run the financial empire? Or then, even while Fred's alive and young Julius Geezer has just frittered away a few million dollars. Remember, by the time he was six, he was a millionaire because of all the tax dodges, arguably illegal tax dodges. You can hear daddy just lowering the boom on him. Darlene's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, I have said ever since he announced that if we had full and free access, and there's no way to do it without, you know, a souped-up DeLorean that serves as a time machine and to have access to the family. But if we could really get our heads around the family dynamics in the Trump plan with a K, I think it would open up new horizons in understanding of, you know, I think about his brother, who I think was his older brother, who died at a rather young age from dope and booze, who tried the family business, but it didn't appeal to him, so he went off and became a pilot, and apparently was badly castigated by Fred and probably Mary and probably Donald. You know, he was just made to feel less than simply because he didn't like the family business. He wasn't good at it, and he wanted to perform well in what he could perform well in to enhance his life. Because that's when you work, that's part of what you work for, is something that appeals to you, that you're good at, that adds to your life. You get what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
And I'm sure there's instructive information to be found by that poor guy's experience. The daddy issues galore with Trump. I mean, and we see aspects of it with his fucking kids.
Yeah.
But the guy Whitaker, I sent you a link.
Oh, yeah, I got some Whitaker, too.
Well, in an interview, he apparently, a couple of years ago, 4 years ago, apparently referred to the judiciary as the inferior branch. Now, wait a minute. Justice is part of the operating field.
The actual phrase they teach in civics and law schools and stuff is that the three branches are, and it's kind of like the Holy Trinity, you know, the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. They are one and the same, but they are all separate. You know, one plus one plus one equals one.
And they have different attributes, different functions.
And so the way we refer to the three branches of the federal government is that they are three and, wow, is this an important phrase in this context, co-equal branches of government.
Yeah.
And so even that phrase that Trump uses, you let me run the government and you run this, I'll run the government and you run CNN. Well, fucker, you don't run the government. You can't spend a penny that the House doesn't appropriate. You can't have a single cabinet member that the Senate doesn't approve. And every goddamn thing you do as president is subject to review by the Supreme Court to make sure that it is not a fart smell in the nostrils of the Constitution.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. Yes. Come on, let's go to the casino. You're lucky tonight.
Well, here's the deal. Let me share something with you.
Go ahead.
Okay, no, you.
Okay, go ahead. History shows us time and again that when there is discord and discourse and dysfunction in our system, it invariably is rooted in members in one of the branches thinking that their branch should be behaving in a manner that's not consistent with their mission statement and prime directive. Am I accurate on that?
Well, yeah, and there's always a dynamic tension between the three branches because they're co-equal, and one or the other is going to try to seek some level of supremacy. History's rife with it. The reason John Marshall writes Marbury versus Madison the way he does, he gives Thomas Jefferson the win, but he also hates Thomas Jefferson, and he knows that Thomas Jefferson has within him some tyrannical dictatorial seeds, regardless of all the prattling about the rights of humanity and you know, slaveholder and all that. So he writes Marbury versus Madison, and along the way says, "Hey, cousin Tom, you win. But by the way, anything you do, the Constitution says that the Supreme Court is going to be the final arbiter of what the Constitution says and what's constitutional. So in case you was having any tyrannical kind of feelings, get over them." Because it will be the exclusive right of the Supreme Court to determine that which is and is not constitutional. And as far as just a couple of years ago, you could hear Mike Huckabee, maybe it was 2012 when he was on the stump, screeching about how Marbury versus Madison, the very foundation stone of the entire decisional law of the United States, should be overturned and leave interpreting the Constitution up to the legislative, the executive, and all the little petty pissant kingdoms that make up our 50 state governments. And then you can go on from there. The concept of the Unitarian president that was advanced by those war criminals that George W. Bush surrounded himself with, and which we will now see in full flower in the Supreme Court. The idea that the president can do any goddamn thing he wants and nobody can do anything about it. Yeah. And then there's the cession, since the second end of the Second World War, the cession of power by the legislative to the executive, allowing presidents to start wars that Congress doesn't declare.
Yeah. Well, and a modern day heads up, for example, in today's world, there's a picture, I meant to send it to you, that ran on one of the websites of Trump giving an address or something at the White House. And he's behind the podium, and behind him in the podium on the wall is a picture of Andrew Jackson, okay, who apparently Trump is enamored of. And I think Trump is enamored of Andrew Jackson because of something that occurred that he was responsible for, that he said words to the effect, well, you know, let the court take me down over it, or let the military take me down over it. You probably know what I'm referring to, the moment of
history. No, with the Indian Removal Act, when he said Justice Marshall has made his ruling, now let him enforce it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. And Trump, with this naming of a fucking gopher, bald-headed stooge Whitaker, to be the acting attorney general, without benefit of confirmation or a hearing or anything from the oversight committee in the Senate, you know, it's as if Trump is in the wake of the election here. And that's the other thing, Bob. We didn't go 12 hours before Trump broke bad with his little press conference yesterday, his little ego trip yesterday. And we didn't go 48 hours without the fucking NRA wheel of death coming to a stop at a country bar in Thousand Oaks, in which over a dozen people, including a soon-to-retire sheriff, was slaughtered.
No, and
Ruth Bader Ginsburg fell down in her office and broke a rib or two.
Yeah, as our pal Kelly said, I don't pray, but I'm praying she doesn't get pneumonia. Broken ribs are nothing to fool with.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But meanwhile, people like that grifter Rodney Howard Brown, that evangelical POS, who was declaring that she should be shot, is out there probably at this moment, for all we know, declaring that Christians are responsible for casting a spell that made God make her break her ribs. So, but let me go back to Andrew Jackson for a minute, because there's a constitutional point here that probably needs to be taken into account by anyone interested in impeachment. The Supreme Court of the United States, under John Marshall, made a clear declaration that the Indian Removal Act was unconstitutional. And so for the president to pursue it would be for him to act unconstitutionally. Guess what that should have triggered?
Well, the legislative
impeachment
branch.
Impeachment.
Yeah, the legislative branch.
Guess what that didn't trigger?
Well, yeah.
Because Jackson had a ham-fisted death grip on the Congress, and in fact, one of the few people, and this is just history and I know it's boring, but one of the few people who had stood up against the Indian Removal Act was a fellow Tennessean of Jackson's who had actually served under Jackson in the Red Stick War, a man named David Crockett. And Jackson used all of his power to destroy Crockett, keep Crockett from being reelected to the Congress, and Crockett, who struggled with money all of his life, winds up striking out from Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, over to an area of Tennessee known as the Shakes, because it was by the New Madrid Fault, and was constantly trembling, and failed there, and winds up on his knees begging for his life in front of Santa Ana, and was subsequently killed.
Yeah.
So
and don't sell yourself short in terms of your grasp and understanding and fluency in our history and our legal system, because it's fully applicable right this very moment.
And interestingly, in that time frame of Jackson's presidency, that's during what is sometimes referred to as the era of good feelings, which is another way of saying it was an era when the branches of government had decided that they were going to just go along. But, you know, the genocide of an entire people, you would think, would occasion some conscience. And it did in Crockett's part.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, by the time Jackson is president, you know, John Adams and Jefferson die on the same day, July the 4th, 1826.
Yeah.
And they both die uttering the words, Adams says Jefferson yet lives, and Jefferson says Adams yet lives. Because
goddess of irony.
Well, not just that. It was because they both were recognizing, little Jemmy Madison was younger than them, so he was still hanging on. Aaron Burr was still around, you know, the great survivor. And the thing was, by that time, they all recognized that the American Revolution was over and that the American Revolution had failed.
Yeah.
because the highfalutin, high-minded government that they had envisioned had simply devolved into a bunch of bullshit, petty bickering, and for the most part, attempts on the part of the wealth class to maintain their wealth. Jefferson lay there dying on July the 4th, 1826, a fucking pauper, okay?
Yeah.
The only thing he had ever done that made any money at all was the nail business that his slaves built. Everything else had come to naught. He'd spent every money, every penny that came in on wine and books and gadgets and building and tearing down and rebuilding Monticello, and it was all nothing.
Yeah.
And so, so the fact that they saw that everything that they had put together was not holding up, and it started falling apart almost from the very beginning. With the contested election of, 1802, when Jefferson became president?
Yeah.
Madison came in third, but it got thrown into the House between Burr and Jefferson. I mean, you want to talk about one of those little forks in the road. Burr, president instead of Jefferson, could have wound up wildly differently. And because we've done such a good job historically of making Aaron Burr the devil, we can never really know what, but he was enough of a threat to Jefferson's power that Jefferson started right then and there doing everything in his power to destroy Aaron Burr. And yet Burr's two governmental moments that are most well known, and of course also almost not known by most people, are his presidency of the tribunal in the impeachment of Justice Chase of the Supreme Court, and his farewell address, both of which were modest and moderate and brilliant. But again, the government was not functioning as the Constitution intended almost from jump. I would like, in the little time remaining to us, because I think this is important, and you started, you started it, man.
Yeah, I know. I often do.
You started out by, in large part by talking about, what did you refer to him? This fucking clown Whitaker. Is that close?
Bald-headed stooge.
Oh, bald-headed stooge. Yes. No offense to the follicularly challenged, of whom I am one. and you mentioned his views on the judiciary. Well, yeah. Here's another one of those moments where you find out that he's just another goddamn weirdo Republican. And weirdo Republican, I mean, from way the fuck over on the libertarian bizarre, reading Ayn Rand with one hand and masturbating with the other fringe, okay? Oh, and by the way, before we do this, some election results, thanks to Daris. News from Arizona, Kyrsten Sinema has moved out in front of Martha McSally.
All right.
So with Dean Heller losing in Nevada and Martha McSally perhaps losing in Arizona and taking that red seat for the Democrats, that would neutralize the losses by Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly, leaving, if Bill Nelson can survive, getting very, very close to maintaining something approaching stasis in the Senate, to the point that that Chinless Mitch is not exactly out there, barking and crowing.
Yeah, with a mandate, he's left without a good.
Well, he may wind up left depending on Mike Pencilneck Geek to break every tie, and if Mike Pencilneck Geek happens to get his ass indicted, well, lots of things go up in flames. So, watch this space. But anyway, back to Matthew Whitaker, crazy-ass Ayn Rand libertarian.
We need fellow citizens to think about, what does Article 1, Section 8 mean? What is the role of the legislature? What is the role and scope of the federal government? I will tell you what I believe. And what I believe...
By the way, that's what the gamblers call a tell, Scott. Mm-hmm. He's not going to tell them what it actually is. He's going to tell them what he believes.
Yeah.
He's about to Tinkerbell the Constitution.
Is that the government in Washington, D.C. cannot solve all of our problems. They just can't. They can't. Thank you. You know they can't. We all know it inherently, and our fellow citizens do, but we seem to always be willing to send our problems to Washington, D.C. and have 5,000 bureaucrats at the Department of Education tell me how my children should be educated. Instead of putting those resources that they've already confiscated from us at the point of a gun, right? That's the only way they collect taxes, is the threat of a gun and threat of force. And then they just write regulations about how my kids should be educated instead of their local school boards that are accountable to the parents or the teachers. So ladies and gentlemen, that's a small part of my vision. I look forward to getting to know each of you. You are obviously the backbone of the Republican Party. I appreciate it. I've been around since when I was a senior in high school. I went to my first caucus and got elected to my first county convention. So I've done this like you have. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for taking the time. Once again, my name is Matt Whitaker. I'm running for the United States Senate, and I need your help. God bless you all. Thank you.
When was this?
That's 2013.
Okay. So he failed in his electoral.
Yeah, the weird ass Republicans of Iowa even said, "Oh no, not you, dude. No, yeah. Fuck no. We'd rather have the hog deballer." But the takeaway there is that he sees the common obligation of the American people to support, you know, the We the People part of the Constitution as a mugging.
Oh yeah, yeah. And in
if Matt Whitaker had a choice, how much money do you think Matt Whitaker would give to the government every year?
Oh,
not one thin fucking dime.
No, this is what we're up against, Bob. I mean, to close it out, unless you got more. This is the dance that we're frantically engaging in. I think there was a novel or a movie some years ago on dancing as fast as I can. This is the tap dance that we're all trying to do. And, you know that Tuesday's results, some of which are still coming in, has scared people.
Well, yeah, you know Brian Kemp disenfranchised more people than he won by.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a thing.
It's like the situation, for lack of a better term, is fluid, all right? And it's going to get uglier before it gets prettier, okay? I'll grant you that. That's, I'm slowly becoming a non-relentless optimist. But let me give you two quick things. Send good vibes to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And this last thing. And this is what I woke up to today when I finally did get up. I fired up the TV. It was the news, the local news, on the NBC station here. And they were interviewing a woman. I would say she was maybe 30 or 35. I don't know what her connection to the club in Thousand Oaks was, but she was obviously distraught. And she said words that cut me to the quick. We're in the club now. I guess we're in the club now. And if these massacres have become so commonplace and ordinary that, it's like you say, the NRA wheel of death, then God help us. Somebody help us. Because I don't want this to be the new normal.
A little late, Scott. It already is.
I know. Well, anyway, Bob, it's as always. I'm glad I did call because you instructed me on some stuff, and that's what the show does so well. So thank you. Hats off to you.
Well, thank you very kindly, Scott. I really do appreciate it. As always, great conversation.
Okay, thanks again. Take care. Be happy.
And, all right.
Tomorrow's Friday.
Tomorrow is another day.
What's the worst that could happen on a Friday?
Shut up.
Don't even go there.
Shut the fuck up. No, really.
All right.
See you. See you, Scott. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And so that brings us to the end of the program. A final note courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. Best wishes for the speedy and full recovery of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I will take the news reports at face value that her rib fractures were the result of a fall in her office. Because unexplained fractures are a symptom of pancreatic cancer, and considering her recent medical history, I hope that's not some sort of indication that she's out of remission. At the very least, I hope they run the proper screens and tests to rule that out. I have no doubt that they will, and I hadn't even thought about that, Darlene, and now I'm kind of gut sick all over again. Earlier today over on Facebook, Sister Carol Baker said, Dear RBG, here you broke a few ribs. I'm not using mine so much. You're welcome to three or four of mine. And while you're in there, why don't you grab a kidney just for good luck? And later on, our buddy Ron in the far frozen north says, Listen, she's welcome to a hunk of my liver while she's at it. There's a lot of people who don't pray who are at least sending the best thoughts they've got and the positive energy or whatever we call it toward Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I suspect the broader Horn Family Community Congregation is part of that. By the way, a note, I got this from Kathy Malloy. Reservations are open on a first-come basis for the Malloy book signing weekend at Sautee Mountain Resort near Helen, Georgia. That's S-A-U-T-E-E, mountainretreat.com. There are four five-bedroom villas. The whole weekend's going for $550 for a single or a $650 double. All meals included except Saturday lunch. And there will be Saturday a barbecue dinner Saturday evening. By me. So if you want to go. And the North Georgia Mountains will be a wonderful weekend. Limited space availability between 20 and 47 people. SauteeMountainRetreat.com. SAUTEE MountainRetreat.com. So if you want to come hang out in the North Georgia Mountains and get your book signed, it'll be a wonderful time. And we'll close the evening with $345 to raise. That means tomorrow we'll have a $545 fundraising goal. And it's sufficient to make one's liver quiver, but at any rate, maybe it'll go down overnight. Let's see. We had a request in. Oh, by the way, thanks to, again, Darius for the Arizona update. Just wrapping things up, Steve from North Carolina also sent along a story. It turns out, you know, because, well, damn it, Florida. Turns out that a bunch of Broward County ballots were mysteriously discovered left behind. A teacher found them. A ballot box was left behind at a polling place in Broward County, Florida. It was labeled provisional ballot box. Lakeisha Sori, a teacher at the school, discovered a locked ballot box at Sunshine Elementary School in Miramar. Found it about 3 p.m. in the same area where voting had been held. Lakeisha Sori said, I didn't even want to touch it. And so she called a member of the legislature, and they called the supervisor of elections. Um, one of the election office officials, the supervisor, said, it's probably full of blank ballots. Question then being, if it's full of blank ballots, why is it locked? Watch this space. Jesus. You know, again, a country that wants to operationally be democratic as opposed to merely aspirationally does not have these kinds of problems. And just for you, Michael, just for you, by request, yes, Matt Whitaker, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian. Love you, Bob. Please do the good God-fearing white Christian maggot rundown. Ha, 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 ha. There you go, Michael. There you go. Thanks again to everybody who keeps the program on the air. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Remember, if we get one new subscriber a day between now and the end, this time next year, we can stop doing the fundraising thing because it'll just be automatic. We're not there. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room this evening. Thank you very kindly to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, taking a much-needed respite at this point in time. Thank you. Just getting a little time away. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.